Hello, my name is Dylan Willis. I am a 17-year-old and a senior at White Station High School. And I have with me Ms. Charlie Nelson. And if you could please introduce yourself.
Okay, my name is Charlie May Nelson. That's spelled M-A-Y. I was named after my daddy.
Nice. Very nice. Today is February 12th, 2019, and we are in the MIFA building in Memphis, Tennessee. So this interview will be centered around the theme of progress and paradox, which essentially deals with the idea of how we as a human race have innovated and changed our way of life, and how also during that time came negative consequences that have harmed our way of life. So I want to talk to you, Ms. Nelson, about your life and how advancements during that time have led to positive and negative outcomes. So starting off, I want to talk to you about your childhood. And first, can you tell me about when and where you grew up and what your childhood was like?
Okay, I was born in Lake Cumnet, Mississippi, and I was there until I was 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Memphis, Tennessee. And we actually moved on Mulberry behind where the Civil Rights Museum. There used to be like these row houses. And so we lived there for a while. And then we moved into the housing projects, which was called Clayman Homes. Mm-hmm. But it's nothing like what it is now. Because when we moved into the Clayman home, it was all new. And it was always, the project was for a stepping stone to get to something better. Mm-hmm. And you just didn't live there forever. Mm-hmm. So most of the people that lived there came from the country, what I call Mississippi, the country. And so they had gardens with fruit and vegetables and flowers and things like that. So I would say basically my childhood was pretty fun. Much fun. We had toys that were made for us most of the time by our father, because he could make anything. And like skateboards and all these fancy things that you have now, but he actually made us boards out of old skates. And we had one bike. There were six kids. We had one bike. We had dishes and the dolls and everything that, you know, most kids have. Christmas was always fun, was the fun part, and because we got to eat lots of candy and cakes and cookies.
When were you born? What year?
I was born in 1950, and when I, well, let me just go back to my childhood. When we moved to Memphis, and I started school, I went to LaRose school. But it was not an elementary school at that time. It was first through 12th grade. I had never seen that many people in my life, because we lived in a small country town. It might have been, what, 200 or 300 people there. But when I saw 200 or 300 people on my first day of school, it was very dramatic. But I remember that was the only thing that I remember that was kind of weird and scary, was going to school, my first day of school.
So what was it like growing up in the civil rights movement, and I guess kind of like the discrimination and how that impacted you?
Well, now, you know something, Dylan, it's really kind of interesting that you say that, because I really didn't know the difference, because my parents, we kind of stayed in our place. You know how people, you grow up and you go, like, you didn't go places that didn't accept black people. And so I really didn't know that was happening until Dr. Martin Luther King came on. I mean, you know, it was like all of a sudden there's Dr. King. And, but growing up, when we went on road trips, it's like we took our own food. We didn't have to stop in a restaurant to get foods. I don't think I ever had a McDonald's sandwich until I was like 17 or 18 years old, because you just didn't stop at a McDonald's and get a burger. That you didn't want, my parents didn't want us to see the four colors.
Yeah.
signs. And so we never, you know, really went through that until, we never even really knew we were poor until people told us that we were poor, because we always had food, we always had clean clothes, we always went to school. And my mother never worked. Mm-hmm. She was one of those few women that never worked. And so my father, so we had both parents too. And so really, to be honest, growing up during that time, yes, there was things that was going on, but you know, really I wasn't a part of it until Dr. King came and to Memphis, and he was talking about everything that was going on. I mean, because we knew we couldn't go to certain places, but when he started talking about it, then you really start looking around. And I actually got to see Dr. King speak one time. I think I was like 17 years old, and I went with my uncle from St. Louis, because my daddy was totally, he wasn't against Dr. King, but he wasn't really dealing with what he was saying. He wasn't going to be public about it because he could probably get in trouble with his job or whatever.
Right. Okay. So has your life been different from what you imagined as a teenager?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, really as a teenager, I think I was really a teenager. I grew up as a teenager. All the stuff that you guys have now, what makes you really, really think about things in the future. Mm-hmm. We just had fun at that particular moment. Right. We did what we were supposed to do. We were supposed to go to school. We were supposed to make good grades. There was not a reason for us not to make good grades, and we were supposed to go to college. So there was really not anything that, you know, then all of a sudden, maybe like in your 20s, maybe even close to 30, you go like, wait a minute, I need to get myself on track here and decide what you really truly wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But to say, I always said I wanted to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. But then when I start looking at little kids, I didn't think I wanted to do that anymore. I didn't want to spend my whole day with little kids. Mm-hmm. Not to say that there were some bad little kids. Right. And I don't think I would have wanted to spend my time with them. So, and I always said that if I was going to teach, I would want to teach some kids perhaps more your age, or maybe kind of like that in the middle, that can take themselves to the bathroom and all that kind of thing.
Okay.
So, but my life now is really, when I decided what I wanted to do, I really started doing what I wanted to do when I got married, because my ex-husband was in the music business. And so it was a lot of parties and things, and who didn't like a good party?
Right.
And so I always wanted to do events. And I always wanted to have a good party. And my job as the director of special events, and I've been working in special events pretty much all my life, is that you get to spend other people's money and create an event that you wouldn't mind going to. Mm-hmm. Even if you didn't, it's like you always are able to get out there and create something different.
So you are currently the director of special events at MIFA, and you deal with volunteering and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, a lot of volunteers. As a matter of fact, I was director of events at Rhodes College, I worked in events at CBS Television in Los Angeles, worked for an ad agency in events in Chicago. Coming to MIFA, though, was totally different, because I came in as the director of special event, of a volunteer / special events.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but MIFA had unbelievable numbers of volunteers. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I got here, they said, oh, you have this event called Starry Nights, and you're gonna need 100 volunteers every every night for 40 days, and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm going to lose my job, because I don't know 100 people that's going to come here for 40 days and still have people to come and deliver meals. And
right, right.
And at that time, Michael had 26 programs. So you were trying to find volunteers for all those programs, and then you had this event that happened every evening for 40 days, for 40 nights, and you had to find at least 100 volunteers to do it. But I was lucky that they usually have had a number of volunteers. As a matter of fact, the volunteers were telling me what to do because mm-hmm. most of them had done it, you know, so many times before. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I want to bring a quick quote from the Victorian poet Thomas Hardy. Mm-hmm. He said that Jewels and joy designed to ravish the sensuous mind, lie lightless, all their sparkles, bleared and black and blind. So this line was actually talking about the Titanic when it sunk. But I thought it could be used to describe people that are less fortunate. So like jewels being people and sparkles being their potential. So working in the field of volunteering, do you see this a lot of people, you know, not getting, or that are less fortunate and not being able to do what they want to do or have their potential diminished?
Oh, you definitely see that, especially working here at MIFA. We work with a lot of elderly people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let me just say this. Most of the people are living up to their potential, whatever it is they can do. If they can walk, even if they're in bed,
mm-hmm.
some of them have really good attitudes, some don't. But most of them have the best stories that can motivate you to do more.
Mm-hmm.
But the volunteers, I think we as volunteers and people that can go out there and help, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but mm-hmm. The clients that need our assistance, we give them the assistance that they need in terms of food,
mm-hmm.
social interactions. Because, you know, most of the time when you're delivering that meal, it's not like everybody just really need a hot meal.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just need somebody to ask you how you doing mm-hmm. or something like that. But then when the volunteers come back, they'll always say they feel so much better by going out there, delivering that meal, and having that conversation
mm-hmm.
With the client. And so I'm seeing all of those people. What was the word that you used? You said precious
jewels. Jewels, yeah.
And so all of those people, even the volunteers and the clients, could be your precious jewels, because those precious jewels in terms of the clients, that's going to motivate people like myself
mm-hmm.
and other folks here at MIFA to go out and try and raise the money that we need to make sure they have those hot meals and all the other things that they have. And then the volunteers, of course, they're going to continue to work. Hopefully they spread the word that we're doing a good job out there. So those are like, all those people are like good stewards
mm-hmm.
and so they're really jewels of the community, but we have some really good old people out there
mm-hmm.
and they're living a long time. I mean, you know, because most of the time when I was growing up, most people were dying when they were like 55 and 60 years old, like when my father was growing up. But now people are living like 90 to 100.
Mm-hmm.
So they're smarter, not to say they made lots and lots of money or made good choices of how to use their money, but at the time, they did what they could with what they had.
Okay. So coming from the civil rights movement that we already talked about, mm-hmm. how do you think over time has treatment of African Americans, has it gotten better, or has it stayed the same, I guess?
I think, now, this is my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I really think it's about the same.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing, it's just a nice, window dressing on it that, you know, it looks like you guys can do whatever you want to do
right.
because you have these nice computers, and you really, to be honest, have no reason to be crazy or stupid or anything mm-hmm. like that, because you don't even have to study that much. All you have to do is Google it and you have the answer.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that that has really changed the way the other race looks at you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because you still have all these Black Lives that matter. People are still getting shot. They're still being put away in jail for no reason at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that is pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
It might be even worse because you guys think that is different.
Mm-hmm.
Most of you think that is different. So, but yeah, I would think it's about the same.
Okay. So kind of wrapping it up, thinking about future generations and knowing that they might hear this recording, is there any wisdom and advice that you would like to share with them?
Listen to your parents. Really observe what's around you, because what's everything that looks like a jewel,
mm-hmm.
a shiny jewel is not.
All right.
I mean, really, truly, and I mean, you know, you can look at that. You can look at that quote many different ways, but I would say that just really be aware of what's going on and be. And you know the difference between right and wrong, because if you have to think about it more than 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you're thinking too long.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what's right and wrong. You know what your parents have taught you. You know, you got grandparents. You probably even got great-great-grandparents. But I would just say just listen to people around you, and most of the time, with family members and even people that are strangers,
mm-hmm.
have things to say. And I want to just say this. I'm reading this book called The Hundred Story Home, and it talks about homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I just always tell young people every day you should be able to learn something new,
mm-hmm.
not just to Google it. But just life itself, you should be able to learn something new. And as old as I am, I always looked at homelessness of, you know, you look at people and they're asking for money, and you never really think about the person themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, because, you know, homeless people have families too, but there's a reason that they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
They even have a name, but we call them homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
So, just start, you know, thinking of whenever you're doing things and thinking good thoughts, mm-hmm. positive thoughts. Even if you don't have any money to give to a homeless person, you can always smile and say, I hope you have a good day or mm-hmm. whatever. They might not want to hear that, but it came from you.
Definitely.
And just be a good person.
Okay. Thank you very much for this interview, Ms. Nelson.
You're welcome. I hope it was okay.
Pretty good.
That's how it plays from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.